A legacy of the Obama administration is the requirement that federal contractors and their subs provide employees with paid sick leave, up to 7 days a year for full-time people. It presents both a cost and an administrative burden. Joining me in studio with what this all means to contractors, David Warner, a partner at the Center Law and Consulting. Mr. Warner, good to have you in.
Yeah, good morning, Tom.
I guess I thought this is one of those Obama-era rules that the Trump administration had rescinded, because there were quite a number of them affecting contractors, but not this one?
Not this one, at least not yet. And we haven't really heard anything that would suggest that it's on the chopping block. I think the primary one that people think of as being rescinded was the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces executive order. That was rescinded quite quickly, and that was not a surprise. The contracting industry was very upset against that one, and I think that one was known to be pulled as a result of the election. I think sick leave's here to stay.
Okay, so the question, I guess, then, is in calculating their costs for a contract, can contractors pass this along to the government, or is it something that they have to absorb?
I think they can pass it through, certainly. I think it's going to be considered in the pricing. I think where they get caught short is where they don't realize that the executive order is now becoming effective. It's operative for contracts that were entered into after January 1, 2017, with some exceptions. So as legacy contracts die and are replaced with new contract vehicles, those new contracts are going to be subject to the executive order. And if they don't adjust their pricing accordingly, they'll be eating those costs.
Yeah, because they can't just, in other words, boilerplate over all the T's and C's from the earlier contract, say in a follow-on,
right,
or from a similar contract somewhere else. They've got to really start over again with, in terms of the language and pricing promises.
Absolutely. And I think the other people that are going to get pinched are subcontractors, those that don't have that direct contractual relationship with the federal government. And if they're not sophisticated enough to keep up with the executive orders, and if it doesn't get passed through, I think we're going to see liability there as well.
Now, there's this thing called the alternate health and welfare rate that contractors use to calculate the total costs per hour of all of the benefits outside of direct pay.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be two of them floating around, two levels of indirect pay cost calculators here. What does that all mean, and when will that resolve itself?
Well, I think that was a surprise, at least to me, when that came out. And what you're referring to is that health and welfare rate. I believe it's $4.44 per hour, or 41. And when they adjusted it, they issued a second one that was about 27 cents lower.
And this is coming from the Labor Department.
Yes, yes. And this was the Trump administration Labor Department. So this is something that occurred relatively recently after the election. And the theory is that for contracts that are subject to the sick leave executive order, the lower health and welfare rate will adjust for the cost to the contractor of the sick leave. The challenge, of course, is the sick leave isn't applicable to all of the contracts yet, because, again, it only started coming online as of January of last year. So you have contractors that may be doing the same services at two different locations under two different vehicles, one that has the new rate and one that has the old rate. And so from a compliance standpoint, it's just another layer of complexity for contractors.
And, of course, contractors still have the issue of instituting these programs in their companies where they might not have had them. For example, construction companies have typically not historically offered sick leave.
Right. Yes, no, absolutely. And the other thing about the executive order is that it's not just the people that work directly on the contracts. They have this concept of people that work in connection with, which is somewhat more nebulous. And I think contractors are struggling with where they draw the line. And one of the examples that is given by the regulations is, you know, the clerk that runs the payroll for a service contract is working in connection with. And that's very broad. And I think contractors are continuing to struggle. And I think you're absolutely correct. It's a blunt instrument. It affects industries that typically haven't had sick leave, and it does so regardless of the size of the contractor and regardless of their ability to absorb that new overhead.
Now, in construction, some of the subs can be small companies.
Yes.
If I'm Clark Construction and I'm putting up a building for the federal government and I have a local concrete contractor, that might be six people, you know, in a cement truck. I guess I'm not a construction expert, but that company could be the owner and three brothers and two sons and a nephew.
Right.
And so they would have to have paid sick leave, at least in theory.
Yes.
I mean, what's the verification that you actually offer that?
There's no sort of self-reporting, and typically these issues arise where someone doesn't receive the benefit that they're entitled to. There's no private right of action, but the Department of Labor is very proactive. When they get complaints, they do investigate. And to your point, it's often the smaller contractors that have the compliance issues because they may do no business with the federal government, but they support Clark Construction on a lot of commercial projects. Suddenly they're supporting them on a federal project, and suddenly their compliance costs are going up, and it will be an issue.
We're speaking with David Warner. He's a partner at Center Law and Consulting. So what's your advice for contractors to be prepared for this now?
Well, the biggest point is understand your own contracts and understand what contracts are subject to the executive order, and more importantly, which ones are not. And for the ones that are not, if there's going to be a recompete or if you're going to be continuing that work, understanding when the leave applies. Once they've taken that step, once you're aware, I don't think we're talking about a huge administrative burden here, and it really does depend upon the industry. I think it will be difficult for the construction industry to suddenly adjust, and I think people have an understanding that people do get sick and they're going to miss work, but the executive order also permits people to take the paid leave for things like doctor's visits. So whereas before, a construction worker would have an incentive to schedule doctor's appointments outside of the standard workday because they don't want to lose any pay, now there is no such incentive. I've been doing employment law for more than 20 years, and the fact is, where there's a benefit, there are going to be those that abuse it. And I think we will see people using this benefit to their own advantage in a way that was probably not intended by the executive order, but it's simply a fact of human nature.
And are companies able or allowed to, say, have a two-tier system where there's paid leave for the federal work and not for commercial work?
It's interesting. In essence, yes, because the sick leave only accrues to my benefit while I'm working on federal jobs. And the regulations also make clear that I can only use the sick leave during those times when I would have been working on a federal job. So let's use the construction worker example. If he works for half a year on a federal project, accruing a bunch of sick leave or hours of sick leave, and then goes to work on a commercial project, that leave's actually not available to him or her. It's only when they're working federal hours, in essence.
So that, in essence, gives the government kind of a disadvantage, or at least it loads a lot of cost onto the government that maybe in a perfect world would be spread equally among all of the customers of that particular firm.
Yes. No, absolutely.
We've been talking about construction, but this is all contractors, and there are service contractors beyond construction, such as janitorial, landscaping, and there's a lot of work done there in the government.
Absolutely, and I think it's real interesting in the service industry because, again, it covers all positions in all industries, and the service contract labor standards covers everything from janitorial services to nurses to aircraft technicians, and all of those industries have very different views and leave and paid leave and very different impact when individuals aren't appearing for work because they're using this leave that they're entitled to.
Now, one trend in employment is for companies to stop differentiating between this kind of leave and that kind of leave, vacation, sick leave, and so forth, and just giving people a bank of days per year that they can use however they wish. Can that apply in this situation?
In theory, it can. So you could have a single bucket of leave, which is typically referred to as PTO or paid time off, that employees can use for sick or vacation or personal or what have you. And the Department of Labor says, yes, you can still do that. But it's administratively very challenging because particularly in the service industry, contracts subject to the service contract labor standards, vacation is treated very differently than companies typically treat it. And specifically, there's what's referred to as cliff vesting, which means when I hit a certain date, I immediately vest in 2 weeks or 3 weeks of leave, depending upon my tenure. And I have to either take the leave, be paid it at the earliest of either my next anniversary date, the end of the contract, or the end of my employment. So vacation has a real cash value. Sick leave does not. So if you have a single bucket of leave, how do you administer it so that you're compliant with the vacation payouts, but you're still compliant with the sick leave requirements? The other challenge that we see with those combined leaves is you have the states and localities getting in on the sick leave game. So Maryland, for example, their paid sick leave just became operative this week, actually. they have similar accruals, but slightly different. They have 64 hours of leave as opposed to 56. They have different carryovers. So trying to, not only when you're working in multiple jurisdictions on multiple contracts with multiple requirements, it can become very difficult. And I think most contractors are simply going to bucket them out into very separate, you know, increments of leave, because it will just ultimately be easier to administer that way.
So I guess the trend toward greater administrative requirements and overhead costs to watch all of this continues apace.
Yes, no, absolutely. And again, that's why so much of the burden really does fall upon the smaller contractors that simply don't have the space to, you know, absorb things within their overhead. So the six-person concrete company, it's much more difficult for them to stay compliant than it is for a larger organization that has an entire compliance department to make certain that they stay on those rails.
David Warner is a partner at Center Law and Consulting. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll have more information and a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.